actually past 1:30 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow Illegal Curve on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. You can check that out. There's a new article posted by our very own Ezra Ginsberg. We're going to be talking about that article coming up in about half an hour time.
He wrote on a typewriter, and then he PDF'd it, and
exactly.
He copied it.
Yeah, I don't know how I wrote it. I hand wrote it. I don't know what's going on.
Until then.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from the National Post. He's a columnist there. Michael Trakos. Michael, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks, Drew. And shout out to Ezra, who just followed me on Twitter. So thanks. Feels like I know you now.
Actually, you know, it's weird. I was following you before, but there was something. So I want you to know that I have followed you in the past. The question is, though, Michael, are you following me back, though?
Oh,
geez. You know what? I'm tapped out on 200, so I'm going to have to drop someone else to follow you.
You don't want
to
do that.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that.
Unless you want to get your feed spammed by updates about what he's eating on an hourly basis, I suggest you probably not want to do that.
Oh, that's better tweets than some of the guys out there, I guess.
they'll concern you a little bit, but they are entertaining in its own right. That's a perfect segue into what we're going to start talking about, which is Twitter, and that's, you know, specifically Chris Bartsch's Twitter soliloquy from earlier in the week. You wrote a column about it. We'll tweet it out on our Illegal Curve Twitter page, at Illegal Curve. Do you think Chris Bartsch misjudged the public sentiment towards the players when he posted his Twitter rant?
Yeah, possibly. Maybe just a tad, I guess. But it's funny because you get players all over the place, like Joffrey Leupold is doing this, and he's writing columns for, I think it was like Men's Health or something like that. And there's obviously a PR war going on beyond the negotiations. And I think that's what Chris Bartsch was probably just trying to do, is you're trying to curry favor with the public and maybe trying to get some sympathy. But you know what? It's going to come out all wrong because most of the public just can't relate to millionaires or billionaires. And I think that's the kind of the common misconception amongst hockey players, is they come from, a lot of cases, they don't come from much. And then all of a sudden they're playing hockey and they're going, okay, well, everyone can kind of relate to that because everyone wants to, as a kid, dreams about playing in the NHL. But when you're talking about a labor war and you're relating it to like teachers who, in Ontario, the teachers here are also involved with the, union battles and whatnot. So it's kind of hard to stomach when you're going, okay, well, a teacher's making $60,000 to $80,000 a year, luckily, and this guy's making about $850,000 or millions of dollars. So it's something that it's just like, yeah, you're just not going to get my sympathy. You're not going to get my support that way. If you want to be arguing the fact that this is terrible, we don't have hockey, I'm all for that. Just don't try to relate it to dollars and your plight as an everyday man, which you're just not.
Michael, do you think players like Chris Bartsch are understanding, you know, the hypocrisy of their comments, you know, or their current state when, you know, his colleagues are flying over to Europe and taking jobs from other players?
Yeah, that's a good point, because my dad's a union man, and I was asking, I had a good discussion with him about this, and he can't believe that they would do that, just because whole part of being in a union, it's the brotherhood of it and the solidarity. And when you've got other guys going off to Europe and you're kind of leaving the lesser lights back home to actually deal with a lockout, it just doesn't show well optically. And the fact that you're stealing jobs, that's another kind of thing I just don't agree with. And fine, they don't have a contract here, and they don't have work here, so they've got to find work. But it's just, you know what, like, would it hurt you just to kind of stand back and just not work for a while and not go steal a job? And then if this thing ends a couple months later, then okay, oh, you're coming back in for the NHL. And I don't know what those guys who are out of work, if they just automatically just latch back onto those teams. But yeah, I just don't like the optics of it.
Do we know why Michael is making almost $1 million a year and still drinking OV?
Who drinks old Vienna? I don't think they even sold that anymore.
I think that's the hardest question we might ask. But, you know, you look at Gary Bettman and you know, he's hushed the owners and they can't comment. Obviously, Jimmy Devillano made a comment. He's been fined for it, and it's been used, you know, really against the owners. But you look at Donald Fehr, and he's opted to allow the players to speak their mind. He's been pretty adamant about it. What are your thoughts on that, and do you think that that's eventually going to come back to bite the players if there's further discord down the road?
I don't really. Like, as much as we're kind of getting on Chris Bartsch, I think if you're going to ask a hockey fan, can they relate more to a player or an owner, they're going to side with the player just because we don't pay money to go see a hockey game to see the owner sitting up there in their suites. Most people pay because they want to see exciting hockey and players actually scoring goals and whatnot. So the fact that Donald Fehr's got players talking and trying to go in this PR war and fight the battle for him that way in the media, I don't think that's a terrible idea. Obviously, there's going to be missteps, and we're seeing it. And we're seeing some kind of really low blows, like John Michael Lyles and other guys on Twitter have kind of attacked Gary Bettman, which it's fun because he's got a big target on him, and he's taking the brunt of the criticism. But it's funny, like, and I'm not the first guy to say this, but I don't understand why a player isn't attacking their own owner. Like, it'd be nice if Zdeno Chara came out and was going and had a tweet about Jeremy Jacobs, or if Claude Giroux was going after Snyder. Like, you don't see that. It's always Bettman. And it's like, well, Bettman is the face of the owners, but he's not the one really that you've got the beef with. It's the guy who actually owns owns the team and is actually signing your paychecks. And no player has really been gutsy enough to go after their individual owner, and probably because it would lead to maybe them getting traded down the line. But that's the thing that we're not seeing. So it's like, you've got all this acrimony. It's like, well, why aren't you directing it at the guy that actually is signing your paycheck?
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Michael Trakos. He's a columnist for the National Post. Michael, you know, we've obviously spoken, you know, throughout this interview so far about Twitter, but it's rare so far in this day and age, lately, that we've been able to actually talk real hockey issues. Fortunately, you cover the Toronto Marlies to some extent as well, and they were in the news involving Nazem Kadri and Don Cherry and Dallas Eakins, so we'll spend a little bit of time talking about that. You know, throughout the summer, we heard that, you know, Nazem Kadri was working out with Gary Roberts and he was going to get into his best shape of his career. And then he showed up and apparently he was out of shape. What's the true story there? And if he spent that summer working out with Gary Roberts, what actually happened?
It's funny because the way it's being framed now, and Cherry's calling, saying that Nazem was out of shape, and I think he called him fatso or something like that in his tweet. And Eakins was kind of clearing it up the other day. He said Nazem actually came in better shape than he's ever been in since he's seen him. So it's not like he's overweight, out of shape, terribly slow or anything. It's just that he still has a long ways to go to be where he should be if he's going to be a professional hockey player and whatnot. And in relation to the rest of the players, he was in the bottom group in terms of the fat percentage. So those are alarming things, especially when you consider that Nazem had been working with Gary Roberts, who's done wonders with Steven Stamkos and Jeff Skinner and a bunch of other, James Neal and a bunch of other NHLers. So the problem, though, I think, Cherry and even myself, and I've been pretty critical of the Leafs organization in terms of how they've handled Nazem Kadri and other prospects, is why make this public? If Nazem is not where you want him to be, sit him aside and tell him one-on-one and tell him this is unacceptable and do whatever you have to do behind closed doors. And why are you throwing him under the bus when the season hasn't even started? And it's not just this. It's been one thing after another with Nazem. And I get the feeling that, and just talking to Nazem and having known the London Knights organization where he played junior, this is a guy who has no problems with self-confidence, and that's fine. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. He plays a flashy game, and he's cocksure of himself. You want to, in a sense, they're trying to take that a bit away from him and really make him humble, but I fear that they're really going a little far the other way, and this is going to turn into a situation where if he's going to develop as an NHLer, it's not going to be with the Leafs.
But didn't you draft, like, didn't the Leafs draft him in Montreal in 2009 with that flash in mind? Like, it seems really odd that you draft a player with a certain attribute in mind and then try and change that attribute immediately. That seems to have failed so many times in sports before.
Yeah, well, Burke seeks these guys out. Like, I don't know if you remember, but when he anointed Dion Phaneuf the captain, it was because he came in and He walked into the dressing room and he changed the music, he said. And this is a guy that just walks with a swagger. And it was, those were all the comments. It wasn't about, okay, he exhibits leadership skills or he's a franchise defenseman. It was, no, this guy thinks he's the best thing ever. And that's what we want. We want guys who have this, maybe even a false sense of bravado. But they seek out those guys. And then when it goes too far, they seem to have too much of a problem with it. And I don't know what's going on with Nazem and why they are taking this route, but you look at the Leafs' track record with developing guys, and Luke Shen's been traded after a solid rookie year, then two miserable years. Before that, Yuri Tulusti, Carlo Koliakovo, Alex Dean, all these guys have had to leave Toronto to make their mark, and a lot of them haven't made their mark, but the last guy they've drafted in the first round has actually been a productive NHLer for the Leafs, was like Nick Antropov, and that's really setting the bar high. I don't know about you, but so it's troubling to an extent because the Jays had this similar problem with Travis Snyder. I don't know if you remember, but
exactly,
another guy who was very confident in his abilities, and here you go. He's now playing in Pittsburgh, and if he is going to become a solid major leaguer, it's going to be for someone else.
Michael, getting back to Don Cherry for a second, you know, not just as far as the Nazem Kadri issue goes, but just in general, do you think he's a little bit unfair to the Toronto Maple Leafs organization?
Yeah, but that just comes with the fact that this is the team he watches on a daily basis. And Don Cherry's whole shtick is to be kind of controversial. And he's got some problems, obviously, with the fact that both Brian Burke and before Carlisle took over, that Ron Wilson were both Americans, and there was a lot of Americans on the team. So, yeah, I think part of it comes with the territory. Part of it comes with he just doesn't like these guys. And, he's been on Burke's case before. He's been on Wilson's case before. And he seems to think that there's conspiracy theorists out there with the fact that they always hire American coaches and seek out American players like Phil Kessel and David Steckel and now Van Riemsdyk. Like, there's a lot of Americans on the team. And, like, who cares? As long as they're winning, and the fact that they're not winning makes them even a bigger target, right? So, yeah, I think if Cherry was following the Boston Bruins on a daily basis, you'd see more of that. But, yeah, it's an easy target because right now, like, what can you say that's positive about the Toronto Maple Leafs? If there was a season going on, this is a team that was probably destined to miss the playoffs yet again.
Michael, Francois Allaire was let go by the team recently, and he was replaced by somebody familiar to Winnipeg hockey fans and Rick St. Croix. Can you comment on, I guess, Allaire's departure and then what the team's expecting from St. Croix?
Yeah, it was really an unusual departure. Because when Francois Allaire was hired, it was Brian Burke bringing in a guy that he was very friendly and familiar with, having won a cup in Anaheim with, and he was expected to do wonders with a goaltending position that had just been troubled ever since the lockout. So obviously Allaire didn't work out, and it's probably because of talent. Didn't have a really good goaltenders. Didn't have many good goaltenders to work with since he was there. But since then, Allaire, on his exit, tells me that he was having other coaches really kind of step over him and meddle with his business and his goaltenders. And then Brian Burke came out afterwards, or someone from the Leafs organization came out afterwards and said, well, Allaire's system is old and doesn't work anymore, and we asked him to change, and he didn't change. Basically, what we got is just, if you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is the last thing you want. It's just another situation that's just ugly and ugly. And Rick St. Croix comes in, and if I'm him, I'm just kind of wondering, like, geez, what kind of mess am I stepping into here? How much control do I actually have? And I don't envy him because this is, like, I think the fourth coach they've had with the goaltenders in, like, the last 4 or 5 years, so good luck on him. I know he's a great guy because I talked to him for a long time, and really friendly, and he doesn't seem to be as structured, as strict as Allaire in the sense that you have to play his style and he's not going to be bending. He seems to be the kind of guy that, or at least what he's telling me is that he coaches as to how his goaltenders play, and he adapts to them. So let's see how it works. But he's got his work cut out for him because this team doesn't have a true number one, really.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. Another person very familiar to people in Winnipeg is Randy Carlyle. He says, you know, he's going to have his first full year, whenever that year does begin. You know, what has he done to sort of, has he done anything to change the culture of the organization now that he's, you know, the full-time head coach and he's had a full offseason and everything along those lines?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm seeing a culture change in the same way that Ron Wilson really wanted to make guys pay for their mistakes or whatever by sending them to the press box. And that's probably because we just haven't seen enough of Randy Carlyle. He's only been on the job since October. But the one thing he says he wants to do is really revamp the defensive structure. And right now he's implementing a new system with the Marley. So we'll see kind of what that entails. But just looking at the Leafs, how many goals they allowed last year, anything to change the defense seems like a no-brainer just because that was one of their major deficiencies. So we'll see how it works out. But I can't really comment as to if the culture has changed yet because we haven't really seen much of the Leafs since the season ended.
Well, hopefully we'll find out sooner or later. Hopefully we'll have hockey sooner or later. In the meantime, you have Ezzy's Twitter account to keep you busy.
That's right. I got to stop following you. I'm sorry about that.
Michael, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, guys. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks a lot. Thanks,
Michael. Take care, Michael. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Michael Trakos of the National Post. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can also download it off the tsn1290.ca website. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. Some great new specials, daily specials at Carbone. I saw that, I checked it out on their website and on their Facebook page, and I must say, I was intrigued.
I believe that Richie said this, that Carbone, now you can bring your own wine.
Yeah, they have a bring your own wine tonight.
Tuesday and Thursday.
Yes. So we know where Richard's going to be Tuesdays and Thursdays.
I'm wondering, though, if they'll let you take your own ingredients and then cook your own pizza.
There used to be a place like that in Winnipeg.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the 1930s when you were like 10.
There was never a place where you could cook your own pizza.
The You Bake It Pizza was on Cordon Avenue.
I don't remember that place. But if you have,
call us right now. Why would I go all the way somewhere else to make a pizza if I can go just order a pizza?
I don't quite understand. Well, there's a reason why it's no longer in business. I suspect it's a faulty business concept. Yeah. Personally, I'd rather just go.
Did you start a business? You eat it, and they bring you food, and you just eat it.
That's my life. That's just how I operated.
You know, Drew, you set us up. You know, people that listen to our show. People always come up to me on the street and first off say, "How are you on the radio?" No, just kidding. But people,
they say,
"Who are you?"
You do have a face for radio, is what they say.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, people always tell me, like, the thing they like the most about the show is how we give it, you know, give each other a hard time and everything. But I got to tell you, whenever you bring up food, you make it way too easy for Richie. It's just, it's like one of those gimme assists. You just set it up for Richie, and then, you know, Richie just knocks all the pins down.
Oh, at first, it looks like somebody just called into Remus and remembers that pizza place I was just mentioning.
See, so, yeah. Really?
I know what I'm talking about.
See, people
know.
Out so there.
A fellow 1930s B-Day.
Oh, that's very clever.
Somebody else that was around in the dirty 30s.
Yeah, you guys in your age jokes.
Maybe you guys can discuss what your favorite Charlie Chaplin film was.
It's true. Or talk about the Great Depression.
You know, from the guy who's attending a weekly 1920s film class.
1920s and 30s and 40s. I encourage people to go. Charlie Chaplin was the first movie that I saw.
Fellini guy. That Fellini guy, I heard, makes a good film. And also there's a pasta apparently called Fellini or something.
Fusilli.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
Fusilli Jerry.
So let's just go over the things that you've done today. You've mispronounced the word debris as debris.
No, but that was
I want to play that clip.
It's because I was thinking of Febreze.
Those aren't the same things.
I know, but, I mean, they rhyme.
Remus, can we get the correct pronunciation here?
And you've mistaken Fellini for...
Fusilli.
Fusilli.
Right. Fellini was a director, though, right?
Yeah, and Fusilli's
a very
pasta.
Big amongst the hipster crowd. The hipsters like Fellini and all his silent films and all that garbage.
We mentioned it with...
All right, we got a clip here of the actual correct pronunciation.
Hang on, we'll tell
Debris.
Them.
Play it again.
Debris.
There's no S.
There's no S.
Is that from, like, one of those programs that says what you type?
This is from the official online dictionary.
Is it Merriam-Webster?
So you know it's official dictionary reference.
I mean, Merriam-Webster is she still alive?
I'll only believe it if it's Merriam-Webster. If it's Oxford, I'm not buying it.
Well, society will tell you you're wrong. How about that?
One more time, Remus.
Debris.
Yeah, so it's not Debris, for the record. But anyways.
Can we get like a different voice? Like maybe like the Darth Vader voice?
Debris. I don't think that's how it works. What do you think about Bobby Ryan's comments? We spoke about it with Kevin Allen.
Well, you've been adamant the whole time, Drew, that you think it's they shouldn't be going over there taking jobs. You know, I really haven't had too much of an opinion on it. I've kind of probably been on the side of, okay, let them go do it, just because you're giving fans a different perspective. You're giving fans a chance to see these players. You're giving the ownership a chance to, you know, market their teams a bit. And I think, you know, as Donald Fair said, they have a strict amount of time where they can make money. And I do agree with that. There's, you know, those 20 to 40 years. And you know, other people can, you know, you can't play in the NHL at 50. You can do other things at 50. So I don't necessarily mind them making money while they can. I don't have a problem with it, but I know you've mentioned it, and I know it's become an issue, and it might be an issue that fractures the CBA, the NHLPA a little bit. And I wonder how far it will go.
Back to, you know, just Bobby Ryan, though, making those comments. You know, I respect that. I really do. And right now, as it stands,
Bobby Ryan's, sorry for interrupting, he's a unique guy.
He is, and he was very outspoken about how he wanted to be out of Anaheim. He's not afraid.
Well, except he said that he was,
retracted that.
But if you read his life story, and we've spoken about it on this program before, right.
He's had some tough things that have happened in his life.
His family, his parents, and things of that nature.
And you know what? I respect what he's saying, because I don't think enough guys are saying this. And to be honest with you, you know, we talked about this because we knew there were going to be NHL players that were going to go to Russia and Sweden and Switzerland and Finland. But how does, when right now, as it stands, I believe there's about 110, 120 of the, let's call it, 750 or so NHLPA members in playing in various leagues. So you've got 110 or 120 out of 700. So right now, you know, it's not a high percentage, but that's a significant amount. And, you know, when we talked about this, when the lockout first started back in middle of September, we said, you know, I guess in a way you can't blame them, because they're being offered these jobs. It's not like, you know, the GMs are protesting or anything like that. But how, as far as the union goes, how does this really show solidarity when you're saying, no, we're all sticking together. We're not gonna let Gary Bettman and the owners decrease our salaries. Okay, I'm gonna go play in Russia and make some money.
What the heck was that?
What was that?
Remus, what was that?
I don't know what that was. I don't know if
that was, Remus, is that intentional?
I don't know if that was a good thing supporting my point, or if that was...
Was that like a pitcher when he boxed? Like, was that like, do we need to... Like,
what happened?
What the heck was that, too?
That's not English.
Those are terrible drops. Just terrible drops. Remus, you're being replaced by Tim again.
Can we go to break and drop Remus?
Yeah, we're definitely dropping Remus. When we come back, though, we're gonna talk about Ezzie's new article.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about my stat article, which was compiled and created by my father, mm-hmm. John Ginsburg,
and he's an actual mathematician. Yeah, so it's not like Ezzie's, you know, creating math like he's been creating.
I'm excited about this. So this is good.
The article's been posted online on illegalcurve.com. I've my first chance to read it, and it's very good. And also, if you're interested in looking at it, not only does he talk about the stat, there are PDF sheets with a documented statistics that have been compiled. Yep. So let's talk about that after the
break. Dave Manuk put that together for me, and yeah, it's online, so pumped up to talk about that.
We'll talk about it coming right up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsburg.
Funny how Remus couldn't find any Bruce, but seemed to have found his favorite band, Metallica, on the computer.
Yeah, I do find that. I do find that to be somewhat interesting, I would say. Coming up a little bit later on the station, Major League Baseball playoffs. Great night last night for the first wild card game. 4:30 p.m. tonight here on TSN 1290, the pregame show. 5:07 first pitch. The Oakland Athletics, the Cinderella Oakland Athletics, are in Detroit to play the Detroit Tigers. Game one of the American League Divisional Series between those two teams. Hard not to really root for the Athletics and the Orioles right now in the American League.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's Verlander tonight, right, for Detroit?
Yeah, and I think Jared Parker for Oakland.
Really
is that right?
Really good pitching matchup there.
Can we start calling you Drew Darvish?
Sure, if you want. I mean, that's not my name. But
true. What we should have is have you host a show with a translator beside you.
Well, that's what happened yesterday in the Rangers Orioles game.
Or like a food translator. Yeah. Drew's talking about hockey, but he's really thinking about food.
What happened in the Rangers Orioles game yesterday is Yu Darvish got injured, right?
And there's like 13 people on the mound.
Yeah, well, so, you know, Rangers head coach or Rangers manager Ron Washington goes out, and the trainer goes out, and the pitching coach goes out. And
the translator.
And the translator so for Yu Darvish goes out. So the Rangers had, they almost had a minion at the pitcher's mound there.
It's unbelievable, though, you know, both teams that were in the World Series last year are out. Right?
Shut the front door.
It's
where did
true.
That come from?
That was actually that was a good drop. That was a decent drop.
Good drop there, Remo.
We've been waiting
one
all,
for two.
Yeah. We've been waiting all day to try
actually
and
went
get,
for three. Yeah, it was two drops the last segment that were bad.
Yeah. We've been waiting all day to get the shut the front door in there, yeah. And we finally
it's a perfect
did.
Segue because we're about to drop the curve stat.
That's right.
Why is that a good segue?
Drop. Okay.
CIRV comeback impact. Ratio value.
Right. We almost need a translator for the way you describe the stat.
Well, it's the curve stat. So, right. Ezzy, it's your ball game. So, why don't you want to maybe give a brief synopsis about what the curve stat evaluates?
Sure.
And then we can go into some of the numbers related to it.
Right. And I'll give some background. And you know, the article is on illegalcurve.com right now. And basically, the way it started is, by the way, I must mention that my dad, John Ginsburg, as I mentioned, put together the statistic and all of the tables and everything for it. So the way it started is we were just talking about goals and assists, and we were thinking, you know, is there a way to show a little bit more, you know, give it's, you know, we talk a lot about advanced stats, and, you know, what can you show the impact of a goal or an assist, meaning the importance of the goal.
Like,
you know,
like when it happens in the course of a game.
Exactly, because obviously game winners shows you something. You know, you look at a guy's goals and he says 30 goals. Well, or a guy like Andrew Ladd had 6 game winners. Okay, so, you know, those were important goals because they won the game.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of, you know, if a game goes back and forth, there's a lot of goals that put a team ahead.
You're talking about goals. You know, some will say that, you know, every goal is the same. Everybody's always trying to score.
Right.
But there are situations where teams are trying to defend, teams are trying to score, and there are what are called, and it's used in baseball quite a bit, high leverage situations.
Right.
Where, you know, it's the most important time and the most important goals and things like that. So,
well, if Paul Henderson scored 3 goals in 3 games to tie the Summit Series, nobody really cares. Right. The fact he scored 3 goals in 3 straight games to win the Summit Series.
And as you and you know, just quickly back to baseball, it hasn't been obviously hockey in a while, but if you watch baseball yesterday, clearly the pressure got to certain people. You know, obviously Josh Hamilton dropping the ball in center field a couple days ago. Pressure exists and it affects people. So,
and really, you know, The obviously the reason why we called it the curve is because of the legal curve, but really what this is, it's more so, it's not just the comeback goals, it's the distribution of the goals. You know, when does the guy score his goals? Does he score most of his goals when he's behind, when the game is tied? And, you know, what you find out, and we also should mention, you know, calculating this is difficult because not only do you have to, you know, register the goals and assists, which is obviously done by NHL.com, you have to basically look at what the score of the game is. So it's a little bit difficult. So, you know, my dad only calculated the statistics for 4 teams and then the top players in the NHL. So we've got about 115 players. So when we look at the 115 players, and there's a, you can find on illegalcurve.com, Dave Manuk obviously posted it, there's a breakdown, a table of all of the players, and it shows you their percentages. And what's interesting is you see that 34% of a player's goals on average, sorry, points, are from behind.
So one more time, 34% of when a player gets his points is when his team is trailing in a game.
And these on these 4 teams.
These 4 teams and of the players, and we have the top players, Malkin. And the reason why we did it like that is because originally we weren't sure if this was going to show anything. In fact, my dad did a more detailed analysis with weighted points to see if there was any differences in the rankings, and it turns out there isn't. And I should clarify that by saying you give not just a goal or an assist, like one, you give it 0.1 to 1 being what is the difference in the score of the game. So, for example, if a guy scores a goal in a 7-1 game to put his team up 7-1, you're going to get less of a value because that's not really an important goal.
So you weight the time of the goal based on the importance in the game situation.
And it requires some refining, and you'd like to be able to do it for the whole league eventually.
Right, and that's what we'd like to do. But it turns out that that's a little bit trickier, and that doesn't really change the rankings of the players on their team. In fact, what it does is just gives another number. And so if a guy like Malkin if he leads his team in points, he's still going to lead his team in points. But we'll get back to the distribution ratios. So what's interesting is you'll look at players and you'll say, okay, well, if a guy's on a weaker team, he's obviously going to have a higher curve statistic, meaning if his team's behind more so than ahead, mm-hmm. or if you looked at the goals for and a goals against of a team like Edmonton, of course he's going to have a high curve. But the fact is, first off, the difference in good and bad teams in the NHL is closed significantly. That's what would be my argument. But the fact is, you can still find interesting developments. So what we found is of the top 30 players, Taylor Hall of the Edmonton Oilers actually had the highest curve. Actually, I think it was the 25 players had the highest curve at 0.46, meaning 24 of his 52 points were scored when his team was behind. Now, if you wanted to look at a guy that was on a better team or a top player and really what the differences are with that, you'd look at a guy like Alexander Ovechkin. Now, Alexander Ovechkin only scored 22% of his points when his team was behind. Now, you'd say, okay, well, he was on a better team. Well, look at Brooks Like. His curve stat, I believe, hold on, let me pull it up here. His curve stat was 44%, which means 17 of his 39 points.
Which is interesting in the sense that if the team's behind, generally you want to play more offensive players, and Like, especially at the end of the season, was used in a defensive role.
So, again,
I want to get in here, Ezekiel, this is all your work, but I want to say that without having every team in the league, it's hard to compare team to team, but it does give you have broken down four full teams, and those spreadsheets are linked on the website. And so what that does is give you an idea of, from the Jets, you know, how they compare to each other. So the other stats sometimes you see used, you know, who they're, you know, for example, something that we talked about last week with Brian Little, quality of competition. Yep. You want to be able to get an idea of who's, you know, it's harder to get an idea player to player, I mean team to team, excuse me. It's better to get an idea of who's playing against the best players on the other team on that team.
Right.
And who's, you know, top 1-6 on defense. And here you get an idea of who's doing it more on the team when behind, who's doing it more when ahead and tied.
Right. And again, we haven't calculated these stats. And by the way, you know, from the research that my dad and I have done, we haven't found this published anywhere. It's possible the NHL keeps this or teams have this information available to them, but it's never been released. So we have
I'd say likely the NHL doesn't keep it. But
right. We've had no reference.
Do keep it.
We have no reference points. So it's possible that Alexander Ovechkin in the past has had a higher percentage of his goals when his team is behind, but we don't know that. And that's important here. So, you know, moving ahead, though, there are other distribution ratios that are interesting, such as go-ahead goals ratio. So that means that puts your team ahead at some point in a game.
Well, and let me just jump in there.
Right.
You know, we spoke last week a lot about Brian Little.
Yep.
Brian Little had 24 goals last year.
Yep.
11 of those goals gave the Jets the lead. So 0.46 of all the goals that Brian Little scored last year.
I'm sure the biggest one being that, at least people remember, being that Boston 2-1 game, right?
And it's surprisingly, both Brian Little, actually the top four scorers on the Jets, Brian Little, Evander Kane, Blake Wheeler, and Andrew Ladd, all have very good goals, well, higher than average go-ahead goals ratio.
Which isn't shocking when you consider they'd probably be on the ice the majority in those crucial situations.
The top players are
But it does go to show you that, you know, to some regard, the top players are coming through when the Jets needed them in the tie game situations.
The bigger concern would be if there's a huge discrepancy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, when Kyle Wellwood's up there, you know, with just under 0.40, 0.39 of all his goals gave the Jets the lead. So there is, you know, the top players generally did perform. You know, it wasn't the fourth line guys coming through, because you really wouldn't expect them to. You wouldn't expect them to really be on the ice in those situations.
Right, and again, you know, it has to be noted that we haven't, you know, calculated these stats, and this is the first year, and we haven't done all the teams. But It is really good for discussion purposes. Again, if you look at the go-ahead goals ratio, you look at a guy like Sam Gagne, who was on a team that wasn't very good in the Edmonton Oilers. His is very low. And if you would think that, okay, well, a guy like him, you know, it wouldn't be that bad. He didn't have the best season. Another ratio that's kind of interesting is your behind or tied points ratio. So what percentage of a guy's points are behind or tied? Now, a guy that...
At league average, or the average of the four teams we evaluated,
61%.
69%.
Behind or tied goals rate? Oh, sorry, goals.
I thought you said points.
Sorry, I meant goals.
Okay.
So for behind or tied goals ratio, it's 61%, I believe. Is that right?
0.61, that's right.
So if you look at that, a guy that's really surprising, that has one of the highest of all the guys that I believe of the top 30 ranked players, Danny Briere has the highest behind or tied goals ratio at 87.5%. So 87.5% of his goals are when his team is either tied or behind.
Maybe that gives credence to some people make the argument that guy comes through every year. His playoff numbers are terrific.
Exactly. So
I'm not sure if you can correlate those. And again, that needs to be expanded on. But
it needs
Daniel
to be expanded on. But
tremendous in the playoffs this year too, and it has been in years past. So it's clutch performance.
Right. So a guy like him, right? So Richie, he got 16 goals last year. So on a very good team. So it's just interesting, you know, this statistic is showing you really how clutch a player is. He puts his team ahead or brings them back into the game. And the what's going to be interesting is, you know, when we get back to playing hockey, we're going to hopefully calculate this. It is pretty time consuming. And again, thanks to my dad for doing this. But what it's doing is it's showing you a little bit more about goals
and
points.
True, you paid MNOV.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's up there and it's for people to look at. And, you know, one last final thing. The guy with the best curve of anybody over 30 points is surprisingly Zach Bogosian. 57% of his points are when his team's behind. So it's interesting.
It's all available on illegalcurve.com. It's our latest article posted by our very own.
Maybe, Ezzy, if you want, you can raise enough awareness that people can do it for other teams and put it all together.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea. You know, it's just it's interesting. It's for people that like stats and hockey fans, it's something to talk about, right?
It's something hockey related as opposed to CBA related. So right. I'm all in favor of it. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Anybody? What is this music?
Michael Jackson. What are you talking about?
Oh yeah. Sorry. There we go. Okay.
Oh, leave it. Okay. You know what? This music is very Remus. Like, you know, Remus is like a funny guy. He's very happy-go-lucky. This is
Weird
a very
Al?
Good tune.
This is actually Weird Al, who's playing at the MTS Al. Center soon. But I thought you guys were talking about Nazem Kadri and Don Cherry. That was appropriate.
That's actually, you know what? That's good.
You know, except we were going to talk about...
Again, Reem, I'm the only one that gives you credit on this show.
Except we were going to talk about ESPN3 broadcasting KHL games, but it's close enough.
Well, why do we make a show plan if we're not going to follow
Drew,
the show?
Point,
plan?
Drew.
That's fine. We can...
What is a show plan if it's not followed?
That's true.
It's very profound.
That's not true.
Andy.
That's just true.
At least I read the show plan. I'm like other people at this table.
That's true. It's weird because the show plan was in Russian, so...
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $72,000 for new graduates?
I did know that.
Yes, you knew that because I said it last week.
That's right.
Yeah.
People need to know that, though.
People do need to know
it's
that because that is a pretty decent living, I got to tell you. For more information, contact the CGA Association of Manitoba at cga-manitoba.org or give them a call at 204-477-1256.
Those are a lot of numbers.
The CGA Association of Manitoba. We see more than numbers. See, that was good.
I like that slogan.
Yeah, it's a good slogan, I got to tell you. Yeah, and we're thrilled the CGA Association is on board as a sponsor of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, I briefly pretended to want to be an accountant.
So let me just go through the jobs you've briefly pretended that you wanted to do.
You're a hockey show analyst.
You're continuing to be a radio personality. You briefly pretended to be a lawyer. You've briefly pretended to be an accountant.
No, I wrote the LSAT and did a poor job at that, as Richie knows.
Interesting. Well, no, actually, now the entire world knows.
Well, that's the thing. You know what? I've tried a little of everything. I haven't really settled on it. Just like a buffet. I'm like, my life is like a buffet. I try a little bit of everything, and then when I really, you know, decide what I want,
pass out. You've eaten too much and you can no longer handle it.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Okay. ESPN3 is going to start airing KHL games. Now,
first off, there's an ESPN3?
Well,
what happened to 2?
Well, the joke was that Bill Simmons has been saying for years it's going to be an ESPN 33 in 10 years.
What ESPN3 is just an online feed of different sporting events. So it's not like a TV channel. So, I mean, to some regards, this is much ado about nothing.
And it's been reported. I know, like, it was reported in the Globe, and they want to read into it. It's junk. I mean,
I think their first game is going to be broadcast play by play by Steve Levy.
Oh, Steve Levy, yeah.
And Barry Melrose, I believe, are doing the first game.
Not in Russia.
Did I read that Paul Romanek is doing? I think Paul Romanek is doing some play-by-play. No, Green, look into that. I think Paul, remember Paul Romanek?
I think he is in Russia.
Yeah, I think he is doing some play-by-play. Yeah, I read that.
I'm not sure exactly. I mean, we know he does the world hockey championships for the for TSN every year.
Yeah, I know that.
Because he lives over in London.
We actually had a friend Neil Rockman actually made a sign when we were younger. That was like Paul Romanek related, and he was cheering at Paul Romanek. Paul Romanek looked behind him and goes, "What did I do?" It's funny.
It's a terrible story.
You've really brought your B game on stories today, I got to tell you.
No, I always bring alpha.
Were you chasing Gary Green at that point?
Yeah, Paul Romanek will be involved in some capacity.
Okay.
Oh. See, I wouldn't make you look bad, Drew.
Scott. Anyways, you know,
you got a Paul Romanek gold clip, Remus, while you're at it.
Why is he
particularly the Peter Nedved overtime winner in 96 against Washington?
You really have problems. How do you remember all that? Who broadcast those games?
You know what?
I was watching.
It's a hockey show, and Richie brings
might have been 95.
Richie brings
though.
Up an interesting point, and then you give him a hard time for it.
It's not a hard time. I'm amazed that he remembers. It's not so much that Peter Nedved scored it, but that you remembered who was broadcasting it.
Yeah, Paul Roman gave him game 7.
You know, some of the biggest goals in hockey, I understand, but not a random Peter Nedved game.
Yeah, Peter Nedved was a good player.
I'm pretty sure he's still playing in Russia right now.
He played in the World Championship.
Is that the same Peter Nedved?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Because, I mean, there's two Peter Sikoras, right?
Yeah, there's two Peter Sikoras, but only one Peter Nedved.
Okay.
That we're aware of.
The goatee, played for Canada in the Olympics, if you remember.
He played for Canada?
Yeah, on the World Championship.
Because he did. Dual citizenship.
Yeah.
Really? I don't remember that. That's
he had the old goatee, good wrist shot. Slender fella. Traded for Kovalev back in the mid-90s.
Sorry, slender fella.
he was tiny. He couldn't really. He was very thin.
He went to where?
Well, at the end of his career, he went to the Rangers for Kovalev.
Okay.
Yeah, he got traded a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Remus, pull up that goal from 95 or 96.
So, you know, why all of a sudden is ESPN 3, but ESPN as a company getting
involved? A little bit of a shot across about Batman, I think.
Is it a shot?
Oh, for sure. Why? No. It costs them probably next to nothing. They have Levy and Melrose already in Bristol doing their own stuff. They're paying Melrose, so they might as well use them. Steve Levy likes hockey. He's a Sports Center anchor. They'll call the game from the comforts of their own couch, and they'll get
ratings.
Let's not get carried away.
Oh, they'll get some interest.
Hockey doesn't get ratings on TV in the United States.
Yeah, hockey that's readily accessible on television doesn't get ratings. They're going to have a internet network that's going to have people watching non-NHL.
You can't get it in Canada.
In all seriousness, though, there is a demand for this. I mean, there's no NHL hockey. You know, Evander Kane's over in Russia. Malkin's over in Russia. People want to watch this.
On the right tab of USA Today. And they're going to have guys watching KHL hockey?
There's no demand for this in the United States.
Nothing, yeah.
There might be a demand for it in Canada. But
I think there's a demand in the U.S.
There's no demand for NHL hockey in the United States.
That's true.
Never mind KHL hockey that you have to watch on your computer.
NHL can't even get in their percentage of highlights shown on ESPN since they left ESPN. It's like next to nothing.
It's like 0.01%.
But, you know, in we joke around about that, but you know,
it's true. It's not even a joke. It's fact.
The actual hockey markets, and there are in the eastern U.S. Even obviously Minnesota and Massachusetts and Michigan. People want to watch the KHL.
Nobody wants to watch the KHL.
So why are they airing it then?
Like Richard said, it costs them nothing, and it's a shot at Gary Bettman. And if you read the ESPN book, they're not afraid to to take
ruffle
down
a few feathers.
Ruffle a few feathers, good expression. Yeah, when there's no real downside for them to do so, and what does it do? It potentially hurts their competitor in case NBC Sports Network wanted to broadcast it.
Well, I know that Remus is already.
It's like putting
a
waiver claim on a player so that your opponent doesn't.
The old Randy Myers.
Yeah, exactly. It's the old San Diego Padres, Atlanta Braves, Toronto Blue Jays, Randy Myers situation from 2000 and year.
What are you guys talking about here?
Yeah, the Jays signed Randy Myers from the Baltimore Orioles as a free agent. He was terrible on the Jays. At the end of the year, the Jays put him on waivers. The Braves and the Padres were battling out for the playoffs that year, and the Padres didn't want the Braves to get him, and because they had the greater waiver priority order, they put a claim in for Myers. He was terrible on the Padres also.
Blue Jays let him go for nothing, and they paid him $6 million for the next 3 years.
Exactly.
And that year and the next 2 years. But by the way, I pulled it up. Nedved's goal was in 96 against Washington, but it was game 4. Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, go
it's
for
okay,
it.
Richie.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just a shot across.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's politics.
Yeah. They get to hurt. If you can do something that costs you nothing.
That's right.
But gets to hurt your you know, I don't even know if they consider them their chief rival, but a potential rival, why don't you do
okay,
it?
Okay, I agree with that point, but if someone like me, who, let's be honest, I watch a lot of sports on TV. If I haven't heard of ESPN3.
We know, there's no girls around.
Well, that was that was harsh, Drew.
That was a low blow, Drew.
Sorry.
I went on some dates
go on.
Over the years.
Hot date, a date.
Dinner with friends.
Dinner alone.
But if I haven't heard of it, some people like me, they're going to watch. So, you know, it can't but help them get some viewers.
Except you can't watch it.
Why not?
You cannot access ESPN3 in Canada.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You cannot.
Well, as next weekend, when you and I drive across the border to North Dakota, sit in our car and outside of a coffee shop
right.
and watch KHL
games. We can watch
games.
A little avant-garde Omsk versus Metallurg Magnitogorsk.
That's very avant-garde, Izzy.
How did you nail that name?
Or
that was pretty
or
good.
Probably more likely we want to
so
watch.
So hang on. You nailed the Russian name, but you couldn't get debris?
You're really not going to let that debris go, are you?
No, I'm not. You couldn't. I mean, you nailed a Russian name that's got 12 syllables in it, but debris, that's too complicated.
Those silent S's really get me.
Debris.
You know, I'm just saying here. That's all. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. In the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This has definitely got to be the only show that would play a clip from 1996, Peter Nedved scoring a goal. Remus, do you have the clip ready?
Well, we're not like every other show, Drew.
No, that's very true. Except that you're playing Bruce Springsteen over the clip.
Sorry. Inside.
Here we go.
Yeah, let's go. He gets it to Zubov.
Four overtimes.
Can we try to get Paul Romanek on the show next week?
Good.
Let's try to get Paul Romanek on.
Sure.
He's just going to be covering hockey again.
He was
on the Outdoor Life Network, I think, for a bit or something. He was on. He lives in England or something.
Yeah.
I'm a big Paul Romanek fan.
He did a lot of work on the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, and he does the World Hockey Championships every year.
Still does work for TSN.
Like whenever, you know, Randorf do it, though?
Maybe not. Maybe he does something else, like the Spengler Cup or something.
Yeah, Spengler Cup. That's
you know, because he's over there, and it's a lot easier. Just, you know, he still calls a nice game.
Oh, he's one of the best.
You have a great call, too, on the next year, Lemieux, in his final game at home when he scores on Garth Snow. Let's get that one up too, Remo.
Pretty sure he used to do the play-by-play
that same night,
Ford Miller.
That same night when Lemieux was retiring for the second time, well, I guess first time by choice, Gretzky popped the natural hat trick and stole the spotlight. Still the best.
You're still Team Gretzky, eh?
That's right.
Well, Richie's the great one. Why wouldn't he be a fan of Gretzky? Greatness begets greatness.
I believe the call was Mario Magnificent. That's how he did it. Bring that one up.
Amazing. Anyways, you know, we spoke about it earlier with Michael Tracos. The Don Cherry, Dallas Eakins, Toronto Maple Leafs. Is Nazem Kadri a guy that smart teams would be targeting right now in the trade market?
To trade, to buy low, maybe Dryden. Love the pick at the time, at the draft, the 7th overall, I believe it was, in Toronto. Thought there were some other players there that might have been better selections at that time. I know they were trying to trade up. That was one of those cases where Brooke announced he wanted to trade up, and they never actually did. But I do agree with Don Cherry here. I mean, they continue to try and knock this guy's confidence. And what's the benefit? You've tried before. If he hasn't changed, probably that's not working. Maybe you draft him as he is and don't try and trade him. He's got talent. Is he ever going to be the player you think? Probably not. Is he ever going to be the center? Probably not. He's probably going to be a winger. You know, you're hoping a second-line winger at this point. That's what you're hoping for. Does he dangle too much? Sure. There's a lot of things about him that maybe you don't like, but he's got skills in an NHL skill level. But calling him out continually, and again, he stuck. He hired Gary Roberts. He clearly was serious about it and was in better shape than last year. And you know, at the end of the day, I always find it somewhat funny. Because Drew Doughty, is he in good shape?
No. Lemieux was never in great shape.
No? Are they good? Can they play?
Yeah, I'll take them.
You know what? The guy in the best shape in the room, he may suck. Give me a hockey player. Give me a player who can play hockey. Sure, I like if he can take care of his body and be the Gretzky and Crosby kind of guy who takes it really seriously, but give me a hockey player over the guy in the best shape. And you know what? If you're going to say something, say it in private. It doesn't do any benefit to say it in public, yep. Especially in Toronto, when there's nothing to talk about and you're putting fuel on the fire by saying this and drawing attention to yourself. Maybe Eakins wants the attention, though. Maybe that's the other thing.
I feel for Nazem Kadri. I think he's really, you know, they haven't handled him well. And they have a lot invested in Nazem Kadri. They drafted him in the first round in 2009. And then, you know, I think we were doing the show at that point, and we were talking about he wasn't ready for the NHL, just like Mark Scheifele isn't ready for the NHL yet. And he's going to be given a chance to make the Jets. And, you know,
He's been 4 years. I mean, yeah.
Right, it's 4 years. And don't get me wrong. I'm just talking about how the Toronto Maple Leafs have developed him. And he's had varying degrees of success with the Toronto Marlies in the AHL. But really, the way they're hard on him in public, and they're not sure if they want to play him. Well, make your decision. If you're going to give Nazem Kadri an opportunity, and by all accounts, the Leafs were a one-line team last year. They need Nazem Kadri. And sure, there's aspects of his game that need improvement. He's not a very good defensive player.
That's right.
He's a speedy guy, and he can score goals. But
he overhandles the puck.
His issue is consistency at this point. So either, you know, let him play in the AHL again and say, okay, at 22, 23, you know, he'll be a guy that we might call up if we need him, but we really want him to spend another year in the NHL. Pardon me, the AHL. But this whole business of calling him out on his weight and all that in public, it's really embarrassing. It just makes him look bad. But again, it makes yourself look bad.
I would love to know whether or not he consulted with Brian Burke before saying that. That'd be interesting for me.
My suspicion is he probably did.
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Because not that I know Dallas Eakins at all, but he doesn't seem like he's the...
Aside from catching or trying to catch Timo Solani's glove in 93.
Played a couple of years for the Jets.
Well, he's on the ice then. I don't know too much about him either, but I know he's been well-respected in Toronto, although I do know he was also not very happy, or disappointed, rather, to be passed up for that job.
Right. So yeah.
I'm not sure if him and Brian Burke, I assume there's still respect there. I'm not sure if they're in the best terms, the good terms. They may be. But in any event... I just don't think, regardless of whether or not Brooke was consulted on that or not, if he was, I think it was a joint decision that was poor.
If it wasn't, then it was a poor decision
made by Eakins.
Doesn't it sound like something Brian Burke would
maybe
would
you're assuming they're that organized. I don't know how organized that organization is. I think there's a lot of people with. You know, you have Davey Poulin in there, and you have Nonis, and you have Burke, and you have Fletcher. There's a lot of cooks in that kitchen, and they're not exactly putting out the best meal.
Well, right, and getting back to what Drew was asking about, you know.
Speaking of which, what are you making for the housewarming party tonight?
Drew. I might make a dip, and then I take your face and throw it in there.
Okay, let's stick to this cost-benefit, though. You were talking about the lockout. You know, as far as Nazem Kadri goes, back to the original question you had, if you're Nazem Kadri, how could you possibly be happy with this organization the way you're being treated? As far as I'm concerned, a team should try to get Nazem Kadri, and he would the perfect candidate for a player who would benefit from a change of scenery.
Well, think about the Leafs. I mean, Michael Tracos mentioned it. He mentioned Carlo Koliakovo and Alex Steen. I mean, going back, Steve Sullivan was a Toronto Maple Leaf product originally, wasn't he?
Well, I don't
Steve Sullivan was traded with Jason Smith and Alan McCauley for Doug Gilmour, so he's a New Jersey draft pick.
But then he went to Toronto.
They put him on waivers. Chicago claimed him.
Chicago claimed him, and he carved out a pretty good career for himself.
Sure did.
There was that period of time where they had three really young players. I mean, Alan McCauley's another guy you mentioned there.
The concussion problems.
Yeah.
He's working for San Jose.
But this goes back to what they do though with Luke Shen. Okay, I actually like the James Van Riemsdyk trade.
Yeah.
I actually like that because we've been critical of certain moves the Toronto Maple Leafs have made. I actually think the Leafs won that trade. And it benefited both teams because the Flyers need a defensive defenseman because Pronger's gone and Mezeros is injured. But when it comes to how they anoint these guys as the next, Morgan Rielly, for instance. Morgan Rielly's a good defenseman. But they have this history of, hyping these guys.
You're absolutely right.
And Nazem Kadri, was a good junior player with the London Knights, and he was good for the Canadian World Junior team. But, they seem to... say that these guys are going to be so great, and then they're not sure how to deal with them.
They probably don't have as much talent, but you compare it to the New York Yankees, and they bring up big guys, and some of them have busted, and they've brought up some good young players. But the New York Yankees always insulated their locker room
with the veterans.
With the veterans. And Toronto, who are you insulating your locker room with?
Team.
Well, you have Dion Phaneuf, who's not exactly somebody you necessarily want to be a role model, a guy who's regressed, if not... stayed static in terms of his development over the years. He's not great defensively, hasn't taken a great role, has clashed with veterans in Calgary before, not very well respected in the game. Talented, but not that well respected. So he's your captain in there. You're kind of lost up front with, you know, you miscast Bozak and you have Kessler's not the most vocal guy. And so that has to play a factor, too. It's not only rushing the player, but it's the insulating him in the locker room from the
press.
That's
a good point.
And they haven't done that. And so the Leafs are in as much disarray as they were before in terms of organizationally. Sure, they get the benefit of having a pick, like you mentioned, Morgan Riley, a good young offensive defenseman. But overall, they're not that much further along. And they're going to come into the next season. They're going to hope Rick St. Croix can solve their goaltending problem. But we're going to have a very good idea of whether or not Francois Allaire was given a bad hand by the fact that he didn't have NHL ready net minding, or he screwed up the players.
You can only do so much if the talent really isn't up to snuff.
No, but Richie's got a good point there, because you look at a team like the Rangers, who brought up Chris Kreider, right? And then obviously Torts didn't know what to do with Chris Kreider, and he didn't play him. But a team like that, you've got Brad Richards, Marion Gaborik, Ryan Callahan. Nazem Kadri is not going to come in and be your top line player. He's going to come in, and because of his age and his lack of NHL experience. And then, you know, when they first brought him in, you know, you give him 10 games, 15 games. Well, you know, I tend to believe that if you're going to give an 18 or 19 year old, you know, that exposure in the NHL, play him, you know, do what the Thrashers did with Evander Kane, Alexander Bermistrov. Sure, their numbers might not be there, but this whole, you know, okay, we're going to try him out, and then it's different. It was different with Mark Scheifele, because with Mark Scheifele, he played well in the preseason, and, you know, they were going to play him for the 9 games.
But the thing now with Scheifele is you have years of eligibility,
right,
where you're not affecting.
Right, right. I think that the Maple Leafs, from the top, top down, and this is well before Brian Burke got there, they have problems with developing their young players, and they seem to have these unrealistic expectations, and they don't deal with them both privately and publicly. And a guy like Nazem Kadri, I mean, what the guy, you know, he has a poor fitness test. So you criticize him. I mean,
and again, it's all you know, it has to be taken, you know, in perspective, being that he's actually in better shape than he was last year. So is that glass half empty or half full? That's another thing to take into account. Nazem Kadri, guys, also, and I mentioned eligibility in years. You know, Mark Scheifele is not affected by being sent down to Barrie last year and this year. He still has 3 years left on his entry level deal. With the way they've managed, and with Kadri now playing in the AHL, and he's coming in now, he's drafted in 09. What you have here now is Nazem Kadri is an RFA after this upcoming season, if it happens at all. So, you know, maybe you're at a stalemate because Nazem Kadri doesn't think he's had a chance to prove himself, and you don't think he's worth that much. So, who knows? There's much to be decided there.
And that's a good point you just mentioned. I mean, you know, if there's no season, and it looks like there's probably not going to be a season.
Well, who knows?
Well, I wouldn't say that.
It looks like it's possible there's not.
It's possible.
Possible. Yeah, I mean, sir, you know. Do the Leafs know what they actually have in Nazem Kadri?
No, and that makes it the hardest, you know, because like with Bogosian and Wheeler.
And I know he's an RFA, so it's not like you know, has any leverage in this case, but who knows what the next CBA is going to look like, first of all.
Well, if they go lose a year, the NHL players, owners will want to control his rights until he's 64.
Yeah, well, that's fair. That's reasonable.
They'll be collecting a CBP check for him.
But, you know, so if they, you know, you don't know what the situation is going to be, and you don't know what you really have there, and if you're Nazem Kadri and, you know, you have any leverage, and maybe he develops leverage in the next CBA.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, maybe he does.
Under the current deal, he has no arbitration rights. But under another one, under the prospective next one, he may.
And if he does, are you that eager to, you know, spend more time in the, you know, dysfunction that has been your Toronto Maple Leafs organization?
And that's the classic case where you get a guy like him where, you know, he's 09, so now he'd be coming up on his being 22 in the following year, and then you're looking at what do you got, and then 4 years is already free. So it's interesting, or 5 years, whatever it may be. But it's interesting, so.
Let's go to break. We'll find out, hopefully, this year what Nazem Kadri actually is. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live.
Now, is this Weird Al again or Michael Jackson?
You have a weird affection for Weird Al.
That's
there,
Weird Al. Weird Al's great.
We're talking about Nazem Kadri. It's appropriate. Come on.
Yeah, I agree with Reem. You know what?
Why is it applicable for Nazem Kadri?
Because of the fat.
They call him out of shape. I'm playing the song fat. Come on, you guys.
Remus has to explain everything to you guys.
I'm not as up to date on Weird Al as I should
Weird
be.
Weird Al actually was playing a concert here when I was young. It was like 12, 13, and we were at the party at the Fort Garry. I don't know if I told you guys a story. And so I saw him. And I was like, oh, it's Weird Al. It's cool. Really cool. You know, I liked him at that time. Anyhow, so he's like, oh yeah, yeah, just don't tell any of your friends, because like 60 people. And I turn around the corner, and I'm like, guys, Weird Al, and they all chased him down to the next parking lot.
Remember Amish Paradise?
Of course, that's a good one.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Stay tuned to TSN 1290 coming up a little bit later this afternoon. Coverage of the first game of the American League Divisional Series between the Oakland Athletics and the Detroit Tigers. 4:30 p.m. pregame show. 5:07 is first pitch.
Good job, Spoon Man.
Rapid fire.
Back in June, the Washington Capitals hired Adam Oates. He's a rookie head coach. He's going to be their head coach of the, you know, for the 2012-2013 season, which may or may not be happening. Until then, they've modified their plans, and now Adam Oates and Mark French will be co-coaches of the Capitals AHL program in Hershey. Your thoughts on the Capitals deciding to move Oates down to the AHL, at least for the beginning of the NHL, or the beginning of the AHL season?
Probably good and bad for Mark French. Bad in that he doesn't get to be the head coach, and he'll likely defer to Adam Oates to be the head coach. I'm not sure how the dynamic will be, but he will be a little bit different. It's different to be with somebody else who may be more qualified. But helpful in that they'll probably be able to have a system that can be utilized in both the pros and in the AHL, and I think that that's important. In the NHL and the AHL, I think that's important, so if a player gets called up, he knows the nuances of the system. And the fact of the matter is, if you're Mark French and you get to learn from a great offensive mind, one of the best passers of all time, and Adam Oates, it's probably going to be a benefit for you, fit for you down the road. It's an issue if you have a struggling, you struggle, the NHL season continues, French has a problem getting the team on, you know, on smooth sailing, and then something else happens. But I think overall, I think it's a positive.
A little bit of an awkward situation, but I mean, I'm confident that both guys are professional enough that they'll be able to work through it.
Another thing, I don't know if there's any background between the two of them, Drew, but I do think that this game's all about, it's an old boys club. And if you're Mark French and you can develop a relationship with Adam Oates maybe down the road,
right?
Adam Oates hires you, he can put a good word for somebody. So I think overall it's going to be a benefit for his career more than a detriment.
Right. If Mark French has demonstrated to be a loyal foot soldier here in this situation, takes it with a plumb and handles the situation as awkward as it may or may not be. People will remember that. They have long memories in the NHL.
I remember Adam Oates was part of that crazy coaching staff in Tampa Bay, if you remember.
New Jersey.
Tampa Bay before that with Rick Tocchet.
Yeah. And he did a great job.
Oates and
Adam Henrique, they talked about this a lot. He did a great job with the younger players, and that's one of those things that, you know, Mark French he's the head coach, you know, he'll have to, you know, give a little bit of leeway and share the bench. But the thing is, for Adam Oates personally, it's better that, you know, he's doing something, because, you know, you don't talk about a lot of these guys that are coaches. They can't go over to Europe and coach another team. They're waiting for the season to start.
Yeah. You mentioned organizational continuity there, Richie. And I remember, you know, a couple of years back reading an article about when the Thrashers were still around. Obviously, they weren't in Winnipeg yet. About how there was no continuity whatsoever between the Thrashers, you know, and the NHL team and their AHL franchise in Chicago.
Right.
They didn't play the same style. They really run as two different franchises. So, you know, a second rapid fire question. How important is organizational continuity from top to bottom?
It's very important. Look at, you know, back when we had the Manitoba Moose and the Vancouver Canucks, it creates that pipeline. It's very important.
And interesting to know that Mark French was head coach of the Calder Cup winning team in Hershey last year in his first year. So security shouldn't necessarily be an issue. Shouldn't be an issue for him. He's extensive training in CHL, ECHL, Canadian college. So seems like a rising star, so anything will probably help him.
You're right, and the thing is, you look at those franchises, like we mentioned, the relationship the Canucks and the Moose had, but, you know, it also applies to the Jets and the Ice Caps, where you have, you know, Craig Heisinger's the GM of the Ice Caps, and then you have, you know, Keith McCambridge, the history. I mean, you want that. You want to have your team. Obviously, if the teams are owned by the same entity, it factors
it's easier,
in.
Yeah.
But even when they're not, you want to be able to have a relationship where everybody's on the same page. Because if you're not, it's almost like, what am I doing here? Where's the leadership? Where am I going? What's the direction here? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, sometimes that's not the case. But, you know, the great thing about the Ice Caps is they have, you know, the True North's experience with the Moose. So it's a great transition.
Something we spoke about last week, just a quick tweet in from Aaron Portsline, our friend with the Columbus Dispatch. Mm-hmm. Strong indication that the Columbus Blue Jackets management is interested in John Davidson. Hope to have a follow-up interview with him in the not-too-distant future.
Why wouldn't they be? It's a no-brainer.
Yep. We talked about that last week, right?
Especially for an organization which is very well acquainted with being a no-brainer.
And they bring in a guy like John Davidson, you're doing well in that case.
Not only for PR, but for organizational structure, organizational communication, organizational
credibility.
Management credibility. Yeah. And he knows the game and he can manage personalities, and they should invest in John Davidson. I think that'd be a worthy selection.
Two New Jersey United States Senators, Frank Lautenberg and Robert Menendez, wrote a letter to NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman and NHLPA boss Donald Fehr, urging them to negotiate a new CBA. How surprised are you that two U.S. senators decided to get involved in this?
I'm not surprised. You know what? I read this when you sent it. I know you don't think that I read these articles, but I did read this. And you know what? People are, you know, I mean, you think about it, you go, okay, well, you know, some people, you know, have jobs, but there's a lot of people all across North America. And in New Jersey, you've got the arena. We were there last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that area is, from what I've told, there's a lot of development going up there. I mean, people have jobs here.
Well, there's a New Jersey unemployment rate. It's close to 10%.
There you go. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, look at the presidential election. What are they talking about? Unemployment. I mean, these are real people that have jobs. And it's not just one person or two people, which in and itself would be bad. You're talking about hundreds of people. And when you talk about North America and all the teams in North America, you're talking about thousands of people. So I'm not surprised. I mean, this is, this is a completely different set of circumstances than 2004. But now, with what's happened with the global recession, times aren't very good. I'm not surprised at all that you're having, political pressure, and these guys want them to finish this whole lockout business because people are depending on this industry for employment.
Rich Hammond, he's a columnist for the Kings Insider, works for the Los Angeles Kings, did an article comparing the Los Angeles Kings Stanley Cup engravings with that of the Boston Bruins and the Chicago Blackhawks. Some of the people included on the Kings portion of the Stanley Cup include Philip Anschultz of AEG and AEG's general counsel. The Bruins included Jeremy Jacobs' wife and his three children, and the Blackhawks included their team doctor and massage therapist.
How much time does Rich Hammond have on his hands? That's the question.
Well, no, that's not the question.
Would this article have been written if there wasn't a lockout?
The NHL has to...
Can we lock out Rich Hammond for never writing an article like this again on LAKings.com?
One of the people that's not included on the cup is Andrei Lokotanov, the Kings player. And the Kings had to petition to get Davis Drewski and Kevin Westgarth get their names engraved on the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they only played a little bit with the
NHL
Kings last year.
Have a firm policy in place over who gets to be on the Stanley Cup and who doesn't?
Why not? I mean, to be honest with you...
I'm not saying that to be short with you, Drew. What I'm saying is, you know, every team has important... within an organization, and there's certain people that are important that maybe they determine to be important, or they deem to be important within their structure, that's not important in another structure. So if another scout or an assistant or whatever in St. Louis has a far bigger role than that same person in the New York Rangers, and they deem to put one guy on, not the other,
You think a guy who played 39 games for the Los Angeles Kings, like Andrei Lokotanov did last year, deserves to be on the Stanley Cup?
And Steven Kampfer, who he mentions in the article, didn't get his name on the cup when the Bruins won it? I'm sorry, Drew. I mean, I'm not diminishing the role a massage therapist plays on a team, but when a guy plays on a team for 38 games and his name isn't on the cup, but a massage therapist's name is on the cup, I think there's a little bit of an issue with that.
My theory would be if you play one game for the team in the course of that year,
your name belongs on the
Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
You're Stephen Kemp. 38 games? You play 38 games?
38's not one, Drew.
I know.
This is not Price is Right here.
Thank you, Richard. But I'm saying 38 is still a pretty reasonable length of time to get your name on the Stanley Cup, I think.
Yeah.
I think you deserve it at that point in time.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Who wants to start?
I'll go ahead.
Okay. Well, we know you're going to cheer Martin Brodeur or something like that.
Actually, I'm not, Drew, but this guy is from New Jersey. I'll save the best for last, meaning you have to go after me then. Let Richie go last. I'm going to cheer Bobby Ryan from Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
You're stealing my cheer.
Oh, you're going to cheer for him, man.
Yeah, I was going to cheer him.
Isn't that convenient?
Yeah, it is. Go ahead.
You go first, and then you throw me under the bus.
Go ahead.
I think, you know what, I like how he was outspoken. He came out with his thoughts, and he said, you know what, I'm going to you know, stay in North America, and I'm not going to go over to Europe. And he's basically a little bit critical, and I respect that. I'm just going to leave it at that.
I'm actually cheering Alan Walsh this week.
Interesting. That is not something that you would normally.
It's like Dave Fetchuk wrote a great article in the Toronto Star about Alan Walsh's previous career as a prosecutor in L.A. in some really messy areas. And we'll link the article on Twitter. But Alan Walsh has given a lot of his time to better causes, I think, in the past, and has been successful at. And he says he still weighs on him to this day. And there's also a nice little back and forth in the article with some other personalities. It's interesting, but a guy who was, you know, prosecution in a bad gang-infested area in Los Angeles, that's not for the faint of heart. And it gives you an interesting perspective on a guy who sometimes certainly rubs me the wrong way with his sometimes outlandish tweets on Twitter. But give him credit where credit's due.
I'll grant you that one. That sounds, I was not expecting that one. So anytime you can throw a change up in there, I appreciate that. I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer ESPN. And I'll tell you why. You know, sometimes Gary Bettman needs to be knocked off his high horse a little bit. And, you know, ESPN did it in a very subtle way this week with their decision to broadcast KHL games. But anytime that Gary Bettman can get a little bit of a rude awakening and a little bit of a wake-up call, I'm not upset when that happens. At the time, you know, he deserves to have his ego knocked down a couple pegs every now and then. So I'm going to cheer ESPN for, like you said, shooting that bow across his bow earlier this week.
You didn't even bring in the Max Talbot shooting the pucks with the bow and arrow.
Yeah, that was too bizarre.
You put that in the show plan.
Yeah, you bailed on it.
There's about 8 things I bailed on just because we didn't have enough time to get to it.
Quickly, if you have a chance, Max Talbot shot a puck with a bow and arrow. So if you think that I have a lot of time on my hands, he's also got a lot of time on his hands.
It's very true. That's it for this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guests, Sean McDonald from the University of Manitoba, Kevin Allen from USA Today, and Michael Tricos from the National Post. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and the CGA, Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with your latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.IllegalCurve.com. For Michael Remus, for producer Tim, for Richard Pollock, and for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.